Welcome to Panelcast, Forbidden Panels podcast, featuring comic book, movie, and video game news and reviews. And now your hosts, AJ and Martin.
Hey everybody, this is AJ and welcome to episode 111 of the Panelcast. I'm here this week with...
Martin.
Anthony.
Richard.
More people than we're used to having on the show, so a lot of voices you won't be able to follow, and one of them smells funny, looks at me weird. This week we're going to be talking to a couple, we have actually a couple of interviews that we're going to be going through. First we're going to be talking to Mike Schiffbauer, he's a costume maker and designer, so we'll let him chat up about what he does. And the second interview will be with Vanessa Munoz of Blackbird Bows, where she gets a little personal and talks about her hatred for Martin.
Everybody does.
All that and the news. So we're going to go ahead and take a quick break. When we come back, we'll start covering the news for you.
Guys, this is Daniel Corey. I'm the founder of Danger Cat Creative Studio, and I want to tell you real quick about my upcoming comic, Moriarty, The Dark Chamber. It's about Professor Moriarty, the arch nemesis of Sherlock Holmes. I'm working with artist Anthony Diachidua on it, letterer Dave Lampier. Please go to DangerCat.com and check it out. That's DangerCat.com. And please go over to Kickstarter.com. We're running a campaign right now to try to raise funds for the production of the book. So, you know, shoot us an email, let us know how you like it, and we'll see you on the web.
And we're back. So, first thing we wanted to discuss, on the last episode, Martin made a complete ass of himself saying how badly Superior Spider-Man was going to be. Guys, have you read Superior Spider-Man yet?
No.
Nope.
Have you heard the premise for it?
No.
No.
You should cover your ears.
No.
That's okay. I want to hear it.
It's Spider-Man. I'm not real.
Well, last week we discussed about how Amazing Spider-Man had ended its run at 700 and the events that happened that led to that ending. Basically, Martin, you can go ahead and say it.
Well, Dr. Octopus had taken over the mind of Peter Parker's body and had put Peter Parker in Dr. Octopus's dying body. So Amazing Spider-Man 700 ended with Dr. Octopus suddenly getting Peter Parker's conscience and morals.
That's because Peter Parker did a crow on him.
Right, and he...
and shoved all his memories and pain into Doc Ock at the last minute.
Right, and then Peter Parker dies in Doc Ock's body.
Right.
And they close out the book with saying, I'm going to be a better Spider-Man than you were, Peter Parker. I'm going to be superior. And that led to Superior Spider-Man number one, which to me was the biggest commercial ending in a comic book I've seen in a long time. And that was disappointing. I was not excited for Superior Spider-Man.
I was.
I thought it was going to be terrible. And I didn't think that they were going to... I didn't know where they were going to go with it. I think it had potential, but I was not holding out hope.
And then Superior Spider-Man came out.
Yes, it did.
And Martin...
one panel. There was one panel in that whole book, and it was like, oh, shit. I don't know. Should we spoil it? Can we spoil it?
Well, I mean, they know our show by now.
If you haven't read it, here you go. Dr. Octopus is about to do something bad, and he can't. He can't follow through with it. And he says he feels like something's stopping him. We had already known that Peter Parker's conscience was in there, but when the panel basically zooms out, it's Peter Parker's ghost stopping Dr. Octopus's hand.
Which, you know, Gutters did a fantastic job of carrying that by showing Doc Ock making a clay pot and Peter Parker's ghost behind him.
The Patrick Swayze ghost reference.
And the music playing in the background.
Right. That aside, it was one of those situations where I was like, all right, I thought Dr. Octopus was just going to have free reign. And he was going to be a tougher Spider-Man, he was going to be a meaner Spider-Man, whatever. It was just to sell Marvel Now books. And it turns out they gave Peter Parker life still.
But it wasn't just that panel. It was up until that panel. I mean...
Well, you go back afterwards.
You know what? I'll admit. I was up there. I mean, for those of you that heard last episode, you know, I was up there talking shit just like Martin. And then I read Superior Spider-Man and said, holy fuck, was I wrong.
Yeah.
The book was awesome. First off, Doc Ock was laying the Mac down on fucking Mary Jane. Like...
which that cover came out today for a future issue where
right,
it's going to be
and,
Doc Ock and Mary Jane making out on the cover of the future issue.
And you know... Doc Ock was just living vicariously through Peter Parker's body. putting the moves on Mary Jane and telling that bitch what to do.
Yeah.
And it was kind of awesome. But the action, everything about that book was just fantastic. I had to give it up. The book was awesome.
Yeah. It was one of the things where I was like, okay, I got to go back and eat my words. I was wrong. This book has potential. Hopefully it won't dive and suck. If they keep it up, they keep the action up. Don't make the whole thing a ghost following Spider-Man around everywhere he goes, but every once in a while, just put it in the right spot.
See, I honestly thought the bat kind of cheesed it. Like, honestly, for me, it kind of cheesed it a little bit too much. I thought, had they left that panel out and just shown Doc Ock, like, struggling with morality and all the other decisions he was making, I thought that would have been even better. But bringing it back in, it just shows you that he's not dead. And they've already led the spoilers saying that, you know, he's not dead forever. So, however, in the meantime, Superior Spider-Man...
nobody dies
yeah,
forever.
Marvel.
And even, Sabretooth came back from decapitation.
I know. They even brought Uncle Ben back, who was the longest-running person to ever stay dead. Yeah. So, you know, but still, the Superior Spider-Man was awesome.
Yeah, it was one of those ones where it was... I read through the whole thing thinking, okay, Peter Parker's dead, I've accepted it, I'm over it. And then he's right there in the book, you know, and I grew up reading things like Spider-Man, watching Spider-Man cartoons, the Spider-Man PJs, all that kind of stuff, playing Spiderman action figures.
None of that's changed,
man. I know, none of it's changed, but that was me as a kid. And that's what I grew up with. And that's, you know, like Stan Lee and things like that, I'm always excited to meet him because he created characters like this. So when they go and change this stuff, and they bring back this new iteration, and it's a new, almost a whole new story, but it's still Spider-Man. It's like, whoa, okay. And they bring that link back.
That's the point, though. It's no different then. It's, if he's got Peter Parker's conscience and the ghost is guiding him, it's the same freaking character.
Right.
Why is it any different?
Right.
Why change the title?
It is no longer Superior Spider-Man. It's no longer Doc Ock. It's still Peter Parker. So it doesn't make... I mean, it's worse than what they did to Captain America. At least they gave Bucky a good half a year run before they brought Steve Rogers back. They didn't even give this guy... They didn't even give Doc Ock an issue, a full issue.
Well, it sounded like to me when I first started reading this issue that Doc Ock was just going to strut his stuff. He was going to take Mary Jane. He was going to do things that Peter Parker never did and still be the hero. And then by putting the ghost in there, in my mind, I see a fight coming. A mental fight again.
I would want to see a darker Spider-Man. Just like
We had that with Web of Spider-Man, Ben Reilly, and Venom, and all that stuff. We kind of had that, but... We've never actually had an all-out bad, evil Spider-Man.
Yeah, not even evil, just darker, more of a vigilante, more of a...
But he, in this book, I mean, he came out kicking ass.
Mm-hmm.
He had no remorse, he wasn't holding back, he beat the shit out of some of the criminals that are out there, and I almost felt bad for him, but at the same time, mm-hmm. I was cheering, I'm like, oh, hell yeah, that's how Spider-Man should have been.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it showed you a different Spider-Man, and I kind of dug
that's
it.
That's like, if I see like a darker, more aggressive Spider-Man, because that's really what he's so vanilla. It's a horrible term to use, but he's
very racist.
Yes, exactly. He's very,
has been. He's always been the Boy Scout.
Yeah, that's what's so... Captain America is a Boy Scout, but he's... Interesting.
But he still kills people. Right?
Yes. He's killed one person.
The Captain America?
Except for during the war.
Right, that's what I'm saying. During the war, he's killed lots of people.
Well, he had life experience, too, which is something Peter Parker was always a young guy who didn't have a lot of life experience. He got it all as Spider-Man. Captain Rogers already had it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's Captain America. He'd already been a kid.
As a superhero, Captain America only killed one person.
Yeah. Well, so it was interesting to see, and, you know, I'm eating my words. I'm going to keep reading it.
Now, on a parallel flip side, Ultimate Spider-Man, Miles Morales, had a revelation this past issue also, where he was dealing with, he's part of the Ultimate Initiative now, and having this big fight, and Spider-Woman is training him, and she just told him to go home during this big fight, and he's like, no, I'm here to fight, blah, 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 and he saves Captain America's life. And now everybody is throwing mad respect toward him. And they know he's not Peter Parker in the original. He's a new Spider-Man, but the whole world seems to be accepting and embracing it. Even to where J. Jonah Jameson stood up and was like, we will not write any more bad stuff about Spider-Man ever again. I was wrong. This kid was a fucking hero. I disrespected him all these years when I should have been praising him. And I will not lend another word to print to badmouth Spider-Man ever again. That came on this, and that gave me goosebumps just reading it. Yeah, for J. Jonah Jameson. I mean, somebody came up to him and was like, I have the identity of the new Spider-Man. He's like, I don't care. get out of my building. You will not disrespect Spider-Man ever again. And so seeing that was awesome, too. So, like, just total flip side. You know, you got Spider-Man over here kicking ass, and Spider-Man over here being respected. So there's no longer Peter Parker anywhere in the Spider-Man universe, and it's kind of cool. Kind of digging it.
Which is sad for all this good stuff to happen and not
actually have Peter Parker gone.
Right. Like, but it also leads to the legacy that Peter Parker built as Spider-Man. It was sacrifices he's made and being in the poorhouse, and, you know, watching his uncle die, you know, all this other drama that's always happened to him. And it makes you wonder if Doc Ock is going to go and try and nail Aunt May again.
Oh, dirty.
But dirty. This time, he'll be an anti-fucker.
On that note,
I believe there's some news we were going to talk about.
Let's move on with the news. I'll take the first thing.
Okay.
Released out this week, it was announced that Ron Howard would do a take on Neil Gaiman's Graveyard. This is being put out by Disney. Disney's long-gestating adaptation of Neil Gaiman's acclaimed 2008 kids' book, The Graveyard Book, has risen from the grave. Originally planned as a stop-motion animated feature, the project was scrapped last year after Disney and the director parted ways. Now the project is reconfigured as a live-action movie with Ron Howard in negotiations to direct. The story follows a boy named Nobody Owens, who is raised by a ghost in a cemetery after his family is murdered. When he is a teen, he's pursued again by his family killer, being named the man Jack. Gail Netter and Ben Browning will produce. Howard will oversee the writing of the new script. Now, have you read this book?
That is the only Neil Gaiman book I haven't read.
Anybody else?
I want to.
I've never read any of his books.
So, just so everyone knows, that is about as excited as Anthony will get throughout this entire show.
Yes, it is.
It's about as excited as I've ever seen him.
I know. Whoa. Well, pull it back, buddy. This is radio.
Okay.
Now, did you read it?
No, I have not read it. I've read... No, it wasn't by Gaiman. I was thinking Barker, the Aberrant. So, no, I have not read it. I've heard about it. I've heard a lot of great things about it. And it's Neil Gaiman, so we're all familiar with his writing and his story. Neil Gaiman, who is very popular for his Sandman series that came out and has since gone on to write just... like The Neverwhere and a bunch of other acclaimed books that are just awesome. So,
Sandman, and that's all that really matters.
Right. To everybody else, all that matters is that he wrote The Sandman. So I'm excited to see it. If Ron Howard is taking it, Ron Howard, we may not like his movies, but honestly, if you think about it, he doesn't take shit film. Like, he only puts out, you know, he'll only work on high-quality, big-budget films. So to see that he's taking it, it's got to say something about the...
And to see it as a live-action movie is what I liked about it. I think that's going to be a cool move instead of seeing just another motion capture.
The Neverwhere I didn't like. Film The Neverwhere, it kind of bothered me. It was just too... I wasn't high enough to watch that movie. So hopefully, you know, this version doesn't do that because it's a kid's film anyway.
Yeah, well, hopefully they'll do well and it'll go all the way to production, but we'll see. That was... big news today, especially with everything Disney's got going on right now, too. Speaking of Disney, Marvel is working on their pilot, S.H.I.E.L.D., which officially began filming this week. It was announced last year that they were going to be going to... they were developing it, and they were hoping to get a pilot picked up for the fall. The pilot has officially been ordered, has not been picked up yet, but pictures surfaced of the S.H.I.E.L.D. Hummer that we saw in the Avengers movie last summer. And we've already confirmed that Coulson will be alive during this one. This one takes place after the Avengers, but Coulson is still alive. So there's a lot of, well, how and what and things like that. They officially...
Life model decoy.
Yeah. They officially launched their Facebook and Twitter accounts today, which is giving a lot of people hope that this will get picked up as a series and air on ABC in the fall. ABC, of course, being affiliated with Disney. And giving competition to other stations, which are also trying to put TV shows on air. And speaking of that, I have another pilot that was ordered based on the Oni Press comic book, The Sixth Gun, which, AJ, you and I have talked about a lot.
Awesome, awesome series. Yeah. I've met the guys. They're really cool. So they got to be really excited about it.
And NBC actually ordered the development of this last year. It's now been ordered for a pilot. They're going to go into pilot with NBC, saying Lost co-creator Carlton Cuse and screenwriter Ryan Condal executive producing the series. And the book actually takes place in modern day. It's during the darkest days of the Civil War. Tells the original story. Wicked cutthroats came into possession of six pistols of otherworldly power. In time, the sixth gun is the most dangerous of all these weapons vanished. When the gun surfaces in modern day in the hands of an innocent girl, dark forces reawaken.
Think Lord of the Rings, but with the six guns.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah.
So, and it's really cool because in the comic book it shows really... Yeah, honestly it is. Like, it's the five guns have individual specific powers that they grant the users, and the six gun is the one that has all the powers and unifies the guns. So it's really kind of very... Peter Jackson and Lord of the Rings, Tolkien, the whole nine, but I'm very excited to see it. Now let's hope it doesn't go the way of other comic book pilots that we've seen, Lock and Key, Powers, where the hell's that trailer at, where's that gone to, so, you know, let's just hope it actually gets made into a series. And
that's, those two shows they're trying to pick up for this coming fall 2013, we also have Arrow, which is in the middle of its first season right now, picking up steam.
I'm actually surprising how much I like it.
Yeah, it's picking up steam, and then they're trying to rush through Amazon for the CW as well to show with Arrow, which is a Wonder Woman TV show again.
I think that's going to suck.
Yeah, I don't think that they're going to get that right for TV.
Yeah. Wonder Woman should not be on TV.
Yeah.
What?
There's just no way to do it.
The car is great.
In the 70s? It was okay.
If you go back and watch it again, it's awesome.
No, they keep making that, but...
Remake, just replay it.
Twilight girls won't watch it because it's not like Vampire Diaries or things like that, and that's the demographic they need, I think,
right.
And that's
what
keeps hurting them.
That's the problem with major studios and major television companies. Like, there's no grittiness, there's no realness to... I'm not going to say realness, but no, like... extension of the comic book. It's completely, it's like you're watching something that, like Arrow, I'm sorry, it's absolutely nothing like
right.
The Green Arrow. I mean, it's a cool ship,
right?
But it's nothing like, it's kind of disappointing. I mean, it's cool as a standalone show. If you go in expecting the Green Arrow, you're just going to be disappointed.
Even the light ways that they touched upon the Green Arrow in the Smallville universe, that
right.
still was not the Arrow that we knew.
Exactly.
So, but you go back to like The Walking Dead.
Right.
That's pretty much, I mean, it's grown into its own stories and stuff, but I mean, the characters are still verbatim the characters from the comic book. So, it's kind of a contrast in that aspect. Now, moving forward, as far as casting talk and stuff, I'm going to steal a story from Martin here real quick. Latino Review reports that Marvel Studios is looking for the availability of actors Jim Carrey and Adam Sandler to have roles in the upcoming Guardians of the Galaxy project. A few more names that have been added to the list of casting potentials for Peter Quill, a.k.a. Star-Lord, is Wes Bentley, Chris Lowell, and Cam Gijenet. James Gunn is helming the project, which starts to shoot in London in the summer. I know you have something that you wanted to add to that.
Well, I found it interesting that they were looking at these two comedians to come into this role. It's not something that we've seen in a lot of other Marvel characters being cast. And they're looking at Groot and Rocket Raccoon. Most likely Rocket Raccoon for two comedians just because the character is a little bit more cartoony, I guess. I don't know. In my mind...
Have you ever actually read Guardians of the Galaxy?
Yeah, in the books I've read, he's not a cartoon. But
no.
That's what I've been reading.
Rocket Raccoon is one of the grittiest, badass...
No, there's a shapeshifter in there that's more comedic.
Yeah, but there's other characters that I would think you would consider cartoony.
Yeah.
And so the fact that they're saying that just because these are comedian actors coming into roles, they've got to play something
they've
that's
both
be
cut
comedic.
Their teeth on some dramatic
they're
pieces
both
out there.
Dramatic
they
actors.
And,
really
you know.
Well,
so
we've got Jim Carrey in Kick-Ass 2 this year, which, while that story's a little out there,
spooky,
like over the
but
top,
yeah.
But he's not a comedic character in that either. He's
no.
Like the Riddler again.
And The Majestic, he did a great job with The Majestic. The Truman Show. I forgot what the other one was that he put out that was fantastic. Not the number 23, that movie blew.
Or Internal Sunshine of the...
Internal Sunshine, yeah. And then, what was the one with Adam Sandler? Adam Sandler, where all his sisters beat the crap out of him constantly. Punch Drunk Love.
Yeah.
That, yeah. Dude. So, I mean, they both cut their teeth on dramatic roles, so I think what they're trying to do is maybe add a little bit of name recognition to the roles. Because, I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy is not a popular comic book. It's not even that well known amongst the comic book universe. Us geeks, we don't really read all of it too much. Except for the recent storyline that came out that involved them in Annihilation. That storyline is fantastic, by the way. You don't often see Galactus captured and turned into a power station and tortured, and, you know, it's pretty awesome. So up until that point, they were just not really heard of too much. So
yeah, well, and the other thing about this is I don't care what their backgrounds are. This is not a movie that we're creating a lot of FaceTime actors for.
Mm-hmm.
These are obviously going to be characters that have CGI or some sort of makeup on. It's not going to be Captain America without a mask. It's
but
not
but at the
Thor
same time,
helmet.
Both of them have shown that they can build their bodies up if they need to.
Oh, yeah, no, I don't think that's an issue. I think that's a body frame. But, when, you know, this isn't Captain America where it was all about showing Chris Evans' face all the time instead of wearing
right.
a mask or Thor taking his helmet off. You know, Spider-Man takes his
mask
off every movie now.
Dread, people. Watch Dread.
Yeah. But it's one of those things where I think these characters will actually be a personality behind the character, behind the screen
okay.
more.
I can see one of them pulling off maybe a Drax Destroyer. I think that might work out if they build up big enough. But or the tree guy, Groot, is that his name?
Groot, yeah.
Yeah, possibly, but...
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. And then to see other names like... Hedlund from Tron Legacy, Tom Welling from Smallville has been in the running for this. They've talked to Matthew Bomer. They've talked to all these names that we see over and over and over again. They're not necessarily.
You've been talking a lot
names.
About Matthew Bomer lately.
He's a good actor. I like him.
That smirk on your face.
Yeah. So, anyways, we can, but we can say
playing.
That there's no official word on any of it going through. And we're heading into WonderCon, Comic-Con, C2E2, and then, of course, Disney's D23 is too late to be making these announcements as they will have already started filming. But where along the lines are we going to start to get some confirmation for these characters instead of a list of names?
They're gonna be, I think right now WonderCon is going to be the big one,
yeah.
where they're going to make a lot of little big announcements about smaller movies that are coming out, and then they're going to save the big announcements for San Diego Comic-Con, though I foresee it being leaked like 2 days beforehand. But
yeah. Well, and the last time they had D23, Marvel skipped out on San Diego. They didn't bring much to it. They had held it at their own convention. They had the Avengers panel there. There was a small one, but it was nothing big at San Diego.
Have we gotten confirmation that Marvel will be at San Diego this year?
No. But they should be. I mean, they'll have some sort of coverage. It may not be as big on the movies. We probably won't see much on Phase 2. But D23 is a month later.
I think we're going to still see... I mean, it'd be nice to see a Guardians of the Galaxy set.
Mm-hmm. I think we should see some sort of footage.
But I think what we're going to see is another Iron Man war room. Like we have...
Yeah.
You know, we had Thor's throne... and then Iron Man's War Room. I think that's all we've had, really.
Yeah, we get small little set pieces kind of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, so I think we're going to see that again. No longer Shield's helicarrier bridge
yeah.
or anything like that. So moving forward, what did you have anything else?
I have one other story, and it's mostly out of the humor behind it. Rob Liefeld once wrote a screenplay about the rise of Image Comics.
Rise.
Where he talked about how the Image Comics company came to be, in which they just celebrated their 20th anniversary just over a year ago. But they've started to post excerpts from the script, and it's just kind of weird things about Rob Liefeld and Todd McFarlane having conversations the first time they met. But the funny thing was where Liefeld had put in who he wanted to play these casts.
Christian Bale.
Christian Bale.
Without
Todd
any hands
McFarlane.
Or feet.
Yeah. McFarlane, Rob Corddry as Eric Larson, John Cho as Jim Lee, Chris Pine as Rob Liefeld. He also confirmed on Twitter that he's attempting to get the script produced. So this is, in his mind, a very serious project. And in my mind, I think there are stories out there that we could watch more documentary style.
Yeah, I think it would be better as a documentary,
right.
like the Bones Brigade documentary and all that
right.
stuff. I think it would come off like really good to the geeks and stuff. You try to make it a mainstream media movie, it's going to flop like crazy.
There's no
yeah.
audience for that.
Yeah.
So
I'd watch it.
But it kind of goes to the credibility that I was talking about in one of the panel casts before, where they seem to be doing their best to salt the earth so they can get picked up by a big-name financier or investor.
Mm-hmm.
So if they get this movie produced and filmed and they dump all their cash into it and it flops, again, they have more credibility to get picked up by an investor, i.e. Time Warner, Disney, something
right.
like that, so they can alleviate the finances that they're having to show up to put out these books.
Exactly. So it was just an interesting thing. It's not something I really expected to ever see in the news feed. But, you know, Rob Liefeld, he's out there. So he comes up with stuff.
Everybody with Image is out there.
Yeah.
That was kind of the basis.
No hands, no feet.
If you're nuts, come join us.
Yeah.
Everybody has to wear the Infinity Belt. The belt of many pouches.
I just want to see what John Cho would look like as Jim Lee. I think that would be hilarious.
I think that's just racist.
Yeah, a little bit.
John Cho's Korean.
So, and then to pick up a character like Chris Pine to play Rob Liefeld.
Why don't you just, you know, cast Star Trek Interesting. Okay, get the entire new cast of Star Trek.
Star Trek 2 is actually the Image comic story.
Right, and on the bridge of the Enterprise...
we created Spawn and Savage Dragon.
So, and Wildcats.
Wildcats, yeah. It was, you know, it was interesting news, but it was also at the same time I couldn't help but laugh at it the whole time.
Yeah. Moving on, the last story I have today is going along the same lines of big-name directors taking on movies that we wouldn't expect them to take. A few weeks ago, word came out that the Shawshank Redemption director and Walking Dead creator Frank Darabont had come on board Legacy Pictures for the Godzilla reboot to revise the screenplay. Yeah, he goes on to say, like, this is a direct quote from, "What I found very interesting about Godzilla is they start off definitely as a metaphor for Hiroshima and Nagasaki and some of the atom bomb testing we were doing in the South Pacific in the subsequent years. The giant terrifying force of nature that comes and stomps the shit out of your city that was Godzilla, filtered through the fanciful imaginations of the Japanese perception. And then he became Clifford the Big Red Dog in the subsequent films. He became the mascot of Japan. He became the protector of Japan. Another big, ugly monster would show up and he would fight that monster to protect Japan, which I never quite really understood the shift," as Richard giggles hysterically in the background.
That's awesome.
Continuing on with the quote, "What we were trying to do with the new movie is not have it camp, not have it be campy. We're kind of taking a cool new look at it, but with a lot of tradition in the first film. We want this to be the terrifying force of nature, and what was really cool for me is that it is very compelling human drama that I got to weave into it. It's not that clinched, thinly disguised romance or bromance or whatever. It's different. It's a different set of circumstances than you're used to seeing, and that's tremendously exciting as a writer when you're asked to do something else. Godzilla is coming to theaters May 16, 2014.
My birthday.
And will be directed by Gareth Edwards. I'm a big Godzilla fan. I don't care who's fucking directing it. I'm going to go see it as long as Matthew Broderick is not in it again.
As long as it doesn't look like an iguana.
Right.
I sat in the panel for Warner Brothers at Comic-Con this last summer where we had Pacific Rim, like, completely decorated the entire room. They showed this Pacific Rim stuff. People went wild and crazy.
Thinking it was Godzilla.
Thinking it was awesome. No. And then they bring out Godzilla, and they show this little two-minute, you can't tell anything, you can see a completely CGI'd scene of just destruction in a city, holes through skyscrapers, and a tail. People went fucking nuts.
Right.
And, I mean, it was nothing. And they just said Godzilla coming 2014.
That's all you gotta say.
That's
Godzilla.
All they did, and people went nuts.
Seriously, it doesn't matter. Godzilla will never have, you know, like, yes, that the one with Matthew Broderick that came out. I still liked it, but it was not a Godzilla movie.
Right.
All the other campy, cheesy Godzillas that have come out, you know, cartoon. Yeah, even the cartoons, Godzuki, the whole nine, as bad as they were, it did nothing to tarnish the reputation of Godzilla movies. They will continue. Those are just guaranteed money makers. The comic book, which is horrible, still outsells. It sells out on every time it's on the stands because it's Godzilla. This is the original OG monster.
You throw a 70s Godzilla film on TV and, I mean, everybody's seen it.
Right.
Everybody's seen it 50 times, but the ratings in that time slot still jump.
Yep.
It's Godzilla. Godzilla.
He is to monster movies as Hulk Hogan is to wrestling.
Yeah.
You know, it's Godzilla. Yeah. It's going to attract a crowd.
Oh.
Yes, an asshole and
But it was
a bad bleach job. On
But Godzilla looks like it's got a lot of potential, and it's got somewhere to go, and now with a big name like Frank Darabont behind it, I'm even more excited. I mean, what? I was excited to be. I'm going to see it anyway.
Well, Frank Darabont has done no wrong so far. I mean, most of the movies I've seen by him, I've loved one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
Except for that documentary he filmed of you in the shower. That is going to do it for the news section. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break, and we will be right back.
Hi, this is Justin White with Necrosapien Press. Why don't you come down and check out the website at necrosapien.net. You can see all my latest artwork and projects, and we'll have a store up soon where you can buy prints of my art. Thanks.
Times like this, the great heaven knows.
And we're back. All right, so in this segment, we're going to take you on an interview that I conducted. I sat down with Mike Schiffbauer, who is a fantastic and amazing costume creator and designer. And I asked him to reveal some of his secrets and what got him into it. So we're going to go ahead and lead off with that. Here we go.
Get your coat, don't jump. Get your coat, don't jump.
Hey everybody, this is AJ, and I'm having the opportunity to sit down with Mike Schiffbauer. How are you doing, sir?
Doing great.
Now, I've asked you to be on the show today because I've seen some of just the awesome costumes that you've been putting together lately, and I wanted to get you, ask you a little bit about your process and why you do it and all that other stuff, and you know, go from there, so.
Alright, well, sounds great. Go ahead and fire away with any questions you've got.
Well, let's get a little closer. That way we make sure you get your voice in. We're a little intimate here. So your latest piece that you have up there is, I believe, is Iron Man, correct?
Yeah, that's kind of the latest obsession right now.
How'd that come about?
Well, it's something that I've wanted to do ever since the first Iron Man movie came out. A lot of guys were doing them in fiberglass at the time, and recently one of the big waves in costuming is using floor mat foam in order to put together a costume that's a lot more comfortable, faster, and more economical.
And lightweight.
Oh yeah, lightweight. And as that technology became more readily available, a lot of how-tos and tutorials online explaining the process, it was just a simple matter now of following what a lot of other guys had done and going ahead and using the patterns that are available online, putting the suit together.
Awesome. And from what I've seen, this suit looks really awesome.
Thank you.
I think you did a really great job with it. Can you take me through the process of building it?
Well, it's been pretty much easily outlined through a lot of tutorials that you can find online. It starts with a program called Pepakura Designer. Originally that program was for taking PDO files of different armor parts, and it breaks it down sort of like origami, where you can construct the part in 3D out of paper. You literally just print it at home out of your home printer. Several guys figured out how to convert these files into use with foam, and you can download the files and patterns for various costumes like Iron Man, Master Chief. More and more keep getting added every day. Very talented artists out there that know how to work with the computer programs in order to create the patterns. You print it out, you take those printed patterns, transfer them onto foam, cut it, you glue them together, and paint it. It's really as simple as that.
Really? So how long of a process?
It's one of the things as much as you put into it, you get out. I'll sit down in a given evening and spend like 4 or 5 hours, and I can get a large majority of a suit put together in an evening because it's been that simplified. Where you start ending up taking more time is in the finishing work. When you want to paint, some guys like really go all out and they'll weather these things, add electronics so that you can have lights. As much as you want to do is really what dictates how much time goes into this.
So how long did this one total take for you?
The Iron Man suit I put together over a course of, I'd say maybe 2 months' time, mostly in my evening time when I had spare time, not taking care of the child, would be toiling away till the wee hours putting it together. But definitely it's one of those things where it's worth the while. I think I really spent under $200 to get a full suit head to toe. Previously, the only other way you were going to get an Iron Man suit was to purchase one for several $1,000 to have one made out of fiberglass. And when you compare that, what would you rather spend? A couple hundred? A couple thousand?
Right. Hey, that sounds really cheap, actually. So basically, it's just kind of like a trace and cut.
Yes, exactly.
And the materials, where are you getting the materials from?
I purchased 3 rolls of this floor mat foam from Big Lots. They're $18 a piece, and that's really all it took in order to do a complete suit, including the helmet.
Yes, pretty damn cheap. Now that I know, I'm going to go ahead and make my own.
There you go.
So, how long have you been doing the costuming stuff?
I've been involved in making props and costumes, I'd say probably over 16 years now. It started out just as a hobby for conventions. Originally, I was from Northern California. I had a group of costumers. We had a costume club called High Impact Costuming. We did a lot of Star Wars armor. We did stormtroopers, snowtroopers, X-Wing pilots, those sorts of things. Right around the same time, like the 501st Costuming Group was first starting to form up. Eventually, I moved out here to Southern California and got married. My wife's family all work in the film industry in varying capacities, and as a matter of moving out here and kind of marrying into it, I ended up doing it professionally, working for a company called HMS Creative Productions, and we did work on Star Trek, so I got a lot of experience working on that show.
So you actually do this professionally as well as a hobby?
Yes.
Awesome. Are you still with that company?
No, I've since moved on from that, and I now have my own company, Dragonfire Designs. I did commission work for over 10 years. I've only recently retired, and I've been now just doing it for myself. I've started doing a series of how-to videos. I've got a YouTube channel for Dragonfire Designs that I've been showing the process. In fact, right now I've been detailing the Pepakura foam process for building an Iron Man suit, so if you want to check that out, it's available online now.
Yeah, I noticed that you've been posting about it the past couple days, and I haven't had a chance to look at it, but it's kind of like, you know, secret thing. Like, I don't want to, once you learn magic, you know, the tricks behind magic, then it's just not as magical anymore, so I just haven't been looking at it that much. So, you've retired. How did that come about? You just done with the business, or?
Well, it's one of those things that when I was taking commission work, it was a very steady thing. When I first got into taking commissions, there wasn't a large amount of people into it, but anyone who's been attending conventions, especially like San Diego Comic-Con, you've seen it grow. It's just exploded, and now the community is so huge. I found for myself there was more work than I could handle, and eventually just kind of got burned out on it, because these projects are very labor-intensive. Few people who want to commission a prop or a costume want something that everybody else has got. So everything became sort of an engineering nightmare. In a way, it was exciting because every project was new, but it takes a lot out of you after a while.
Right.
So I kind of just needed to step away and enjoy it as a hobby again.
Do you have any intention of getting back into it?
Maybe from time to time, if someone has a project that's really exceptional, that excites me as an artist, I might take it on. But I think for the time being, I just kind of want to enjoy being on the other side of it, getting to wear the things again, and just being a little more relaxed.
Being a geek.
Exactly.
Now, what kind of projects have you worked on?
Well, I've done a variety of things. A lot of folks really like to have Disney princess replicas. That was something that I was constantly getting requests for. I had a run where I was ending up doing a lot of mermaid shells, princess crowns, that sort of thing. Sometimes I've been commissioned to make like a robotic cyborg arm. Other popular projects have been when I've done work with companies that have needed characters for events or birthday parties. One of the bigger ones I did was Davy Jones from Pirates of the Caribbean.
Sorry guys, we have a fire engine in the background. Take a little pause. I swear, he sees us recording and he's just sitting there with those things blowing. Okay, should be good. Sorry, continue.
Yeah, one of the big projects I had worked on was with a group that was doing Pirates of the Caribbean costumes, and I made a Davy Jones costume that was fairly involved. It's one of those characters that's difficult to tackle, considering the fact that in the film, he was predominantly CG'd over an actor.
Right.
So trying to figure out a way to translate that into a wearable costume that was also going to be durable to handle regular wear, that was a bit of a challenge.
And?
Let's see, other... you know, the list goes on, because we're talking years and years of work.
But I mean, like, have we seen any of your work in, like, movies or anything like that?
Well, one of the bigger projects that I got to work on outside of Star Trek that a lot of people I know have seen and enjoyed was Zoolander. Have you seen that film?
Yeah.
There's a metal brainwashing device that's put on him near the end of the film. That was a piece that I put together and did for that. I did some work on some Sci-Fi Channel original films. There was one called The Enforcer, where I had to create the wardrobe, the weapons, and like a futuristic targeting device for the police that were used in that show. More recently, you'll see some of my work in Zachary Levi did a thing for Nerd Machine called Trailer Park Heroes. I made a War Machine armor suit, and I got to wear that for that. That was kind of a fun one. I got to be shot in the head and killed on film.
Nice.
So that was a fun project. A Predator suit that I put together that was sculpted by my friend Daniel Bravo. That's featured in Zero Friends' Aliens vs. Predator parry. I don't know if you've seen that one. I know Comic Quest has some of Alex Pardee's work up in the window.
I haven't seen it.
And the project associated with a shirt, the design that he had done with, obviously, the play on words, Aliens versus Predator,
right,
is the illegal alien immigration being,
right,
kind of like way, way overblown. So that was a fun project to get the suit up in the 110 Southern California heat.
Right. Which we're kind of dabbling in a little bit today, oddly enough. And more sirens. Awesome. I swear, every time I'm out here with a microphone, they come by and they just don't care.
Well, you know, we are right by the hospital.
Yeah, right. It was such a nice day. I'm like, let's sit outside.
Let's make it sound like we're in New York.
Right. There you go. Yeah. Not sunny Southern California in the middle of winter when it's 80 degrees outside. So, yeah, going back to that, I know it's kind of off subject, but I have a child predator t-shirt. It's got a baby predator and a diaper. It's pretty awesome. Parents don't like it when I walk around with it, but, you know.
You got to have a sense of humor, you know.
Right. I mean, I have an 18-year-old son, so you can imagine the trauma I put him through with all this stuff.
Yeah, that's been an interesting thing. I have a 9-year-old daughter that, you know, she's grown up in this, and you know, from birth I've taken her with me to different prop shops, and I think one of the earliest amusing stories with her exposure to this is I brought her to my friend Dragon Drone's shop, Renegade Effects, and she was still in a car seat at the time, and I put her on one of the workbenches next to a head from Predator 2 that was painted by Steve Wang that they had in the shop for restoration purposes, and she crawled out of her car seat, and I managed to get pictures of her hugging and kissing a Predator head as a child.
Awesome.
Yeah, so we consequently homeschool her because, you know, there's going to be notes home from teachers.
Right. No, you're doing some damage control there.
Exactly.
Now, so you mentioned you go to San Diego Con. Are there any conventions you go to? Do you go as a pro, or?
Yeah, I do have pro status. I go to San Diego Comic Con, WonderCon, Nuke the Fridge. I try to hit as many local conventions as I can. Of course, Inland Empire Comic Expo.
Plug.
Yeah, absolutely, because, you know, hey, local cons are the best, in my opinion. I've seen such a change in the convention scene with the attendance that I kind of feel a lot of the older fans are gravitating more towards smaller events now.
Well, personal events.
Yeah, because I think when it becomes very media saturated and a little overly popularized, you kind of get lost in the shuffle. And so I'm happy to see, especially something like Inland Empire Comic Expo, where you can have a much more intimate environment and people can kind of get back to the original fan base.
And it's 2 blocks away.
Well, yeah. It definitely saves on gas and parking.
Right, and hotel and everything. That's one of the reasons why I started the Comic Expo, because I'm tired of having to drive to San Diego, San Francisco, New York, and, you know, stuff for conventions and stuff like that, especially when we have such a big well of talent here in town. It just seems stupid to have to travel to see it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the fact that the town is just, I don't say ignorant, but just not aware of what they have in town.
Well, no, it's a great way for local artists who might not necessarily either know about something like San Diego Comic-Con or have access to events like that, because, again, trying to get tickets to that is nearly impossible. It gives them a chance to get their work out there, to be seen, and become a part of a greater community.
And there's a 3-year waiting list on getting a table or a booth, and the booth prices are expensive.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, that's one of the reasons why I threw it in town. Hopefully, as it grows, you know, we'll be able to get more bigger names and whatnot there, too, but in the meantime, I'm just having fun.
Well, I've really been surprised at how many people now are making their way out to, say, Redlands in the Inland Empire. When I first moved out here, most of my friends in Los Angeles, when I would mention, hey, I live out in Redlands, you'd think I was telling them, you know, travel to the worst place in the world.
Right.
But now, in this last year, I found it hilarious when an event gets done out in our area, all of a sudden I'm seeing people liking the event, saying, yeah, I'm going to come out here. I've even had people that have flown from the East Coast to be a part of events out here in the Inland Empire now. So it has changed a lot, and I'm hoping it'll continue to grow.
That was one of the bonuses that we had at last Comic Expo, where we did, you know, preview night the night before. We actually had a group that had never met before, a meetup group, and what they did was they flew out from back east, met up at the hotel out here, went to preview night, partied with us, just to go to the Comic Expo the next day.
Yeah,
and I'm sitting there like, really? That's cool.
Yeah, you know? I remember when you had that preview night. I was disappointed I couldn't attend to that because it was opposite Monsterpalooza at the time. So I was in Los Angeles for that, but the very next day came back for
that. Right.
Yeah.
So that was, that last one was a bad scheduling day for everybody. Monsterpalooza was going on. They were closing that art exhibit for Star Wars, all the 501st, and
right,
everybody was out
right,
there for that. And then Coachella was going on at the same time. So, like, it, unfortunately, I...
Yeah, it was a little rough for your event, but, you know, it's still a good sign, again, for the fact that there's a lot of stuff happening here in Southern California.
Right, absolutely. Speaking of conventions, are you going to WonderCon?
Absolutely. In fact, I just confirmed my passes yesterday for that.
Awesome, awesome. I just booked my hotel, and we'll be exhibitors out there, actually.
Oh, fantastic.
So, we're all excited about that.
Definitely have to tell everyone to stop by your booth, then.
Yeah, yeah, please do. Are you going to be... What are you wearing out there?
I
feel like all fashion. What are you wearing, girl? What's up?
Yeah. Well, that right now the plans are I'm trying to put together an Iron Man group. I'd like to wear my War Machine armor again, so I'm helping a friend build his own Iron Man suit. So hopefully you'll see us out there, maybe with a Black Widow and a Pepper Potts.
Nice. Stop by the booth. I'd like to get some pictures.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, with the War Machine armor, will you be able to wear the Gatling guns and everything on you?
Yeah, I do have the gun built onto the armor. I've made it removable, so that way if I'm ever in a situation where there's just a lot of people and I'm trying to get through a crowd, it can be taken off. It's a little more cumbersome than the Iron Man outfit, but oddly enough, I've gotten better reaction from people with War Machine than the Iron Man suit, because so many guys now are building Iron Man suits, they're kind of becoming common at a convention.
Right, right. Well, you know, the same thing when the actual character came out, War Machine in comics, that because he's just so badass looking,
mm-hmm.
Iron Man is streamlined, it's all, you know, but this guy just has the guns and everything out there, he just looks like
it's
Veritech.
Intimidating, it's
looks
a
like
walking
a,
weapon.
Right, he looks like a Veritech when it opened up and launched the
mm-hmm.
missiles and everything, so I think that's where it got his popularity from. But I was more worried about, like, does the convention let you walk around with those weapons out there? Do they have to check them?
Well, interestingly enough, I've had a lot of run-ins with security at conventions, especially San Diego Comic-Con. I've had security get absolutely incensed because I had a character that had an umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
And one security guard didn't even want me to walk in with the umbrella because it could be used as a stabbing weapon.
Right.
Now, you know, and you'll see guys wandering around that have a broadsword strapped to their back. When I wore War Machine to San Diego Comic-Con, I did have to go through their security checkpoint, and they had to put the stickers around the barrel of the gun. But I was pleased that they didn't want to disrupt the look of the outfit, so they did make an effort to conceal where they were going to be putting their bright pink peace bonds, even though my Gatling gun is made out of a shaving can and some plastic tubes.
Right.
But they do what they've got to do, you know?
Right. It's unfortunate that the gun doesn't actually work, because I think that'd be awesome just to see it spinning up. And
oh, believe me, when I was first building it, there were thoughts going through my head about, you know what, I need to make this thing into a squirt gun and go to a couple bars that are going to host a wet t-shirt contest.
Or at least took a speaker up and just played the sound or something,
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kind of cool.
But, you know, naturally, my first thought was to use my power for evil, so.
Right. Well, we're geeks, what do you expect? Are you being dressing up like this? Are you a big comic book geek?
Well, you know, that's the funny thing is I, in high school, was very into comics. Had an extensive collection. I remember a friend of mine introducing me to comic books through the Secret Wars series. That was like my first really big exposure. I mean, I'd gotten a few as a child. It hadn't really been a huge interest for me until
right.
high school hit. Collected for many years, worked in a few comic shops briefly, but then as I got older, I kind of fell out of touch with it. I hit that point in comics where we were seeing a lot of variant covers when that was starting to really come into vogue.
Right, right.
I think I really kind of stopped after Death of Superman. Dropped off for a long, long time, and only in the last year have kind of gotten interested again, started rebuilding my collection.
And what are you reading?
Currently, I am collecting, well, for my daughter, she's been getting the Adventure Time comics.
Of course.
I started with the New 52 series. I've got a good run of that going. Still looking for issue number 3, I think. Other books that I pick up right now, I've started, obviously, the Iron Man reboot. That had to be started for my collection. I'm wanting to go back and collect old back issues of the original run of Star Wars Marvel Comics. I used to have
good
all
luck
of them.
With that right now.
Yeah, I lost them in a theft, and I've only recently reinvested. I spent like $40 trying to pick up a reprint of issue number 1. So we'll see how that goes.
Right. Yeah. Especially right now, because Marvel just took that Star Wars from Dark Horse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I've been looking around, and I'm not seeing a lot of them available. I think I've only seen maybe two eBay auctions that have offered a run of like 1 through 34 of the original issues, but I really do want to get ones that are in prime condition. I think now as I've matured as a collector, it's not so much just owning an issue, but going for issues that are in, you know, mint condition, bagged.
Right. Yeah, I gave up a long time ago, and like every now and then I'll come back in, but it all just seems like no matter at what point I come back in, everything doesn't really feel like I'm left. So
yeah.
Storylines get recycled and whatnot. So it's one of the things that motivated me to write my own comic book because I was just tired of seeing the same old stuff everywhere.
Well, yeah, if you gotta fill that need that you see there.
Right. So, and what do you think about the huge zombie craze that's going on right now?
Oh, I absolutely love it because zombies are awesome. Walking Dead, one of my favorite shows. It's something that I'm curious to see how long it's going to hold interest because, like with horror-type characters, you'll see it cycle through where you've got the slasher characters like Freddy and Jason, they'll be popular, vampires will be popular, werewolves and zombies, but zombies have seemed to endure a lot more. Maybe it is because of the fact that we've got Walking Dead?
I think it's because, like everything you just stated, those characters like Freddy and Michael Myers, everybody like that, the horror is actually in the character. Whereas the zombies are more of a background. And,
right.
the people surviving are the actual characters, so you're more invested in that.
Yeah, you get, I think, more of a relatability factor because of the fact that it's more plausible than an undead killer like Jason or Freddy. And like you said, the human aspect of it, even when you're not talking about the zombies specifically, it's the survivors. How would you deal with that?
Right.
And it relates so much to people that are into the survivor mentality beyond whether it be a zombie apocalypse or just an invasion on our home turf.
Yeah, I think it all goes back to like the original Red Dawn, where everybody just wants an excuse to redneck up and weapon up and just be, officers for the zombies, that's why,
Yeah, there you go. It's a valid excuse.
Yeah, there's a reason why you have shotguns and all that stuff packed up in your bunker under your house. Well, that's awesome. So, we're going to see at WonderCon in San Diego. Is there any other cons you're going to be dressing up for? Is Iron Man and War Machine your big theme for this year?
Yeah, that I really kind of want to take that as far as I can. Because it is a character that I enjoy so much. I'm probably going to milk that for as long as possible. I know one thing that I'm really kind of excited for is Pacific Rim. They had some of the pilot suits on display at Comic-Con last year, and they were really interesting looking. So I don't know, maybe that movie comes out of it, excites me enough, might try to do one of those.
That movie is going to get everybody. I mean, it could be robot jocks, and everybody will still love it. Because why? We loved robot jocks.
I remember when I lived in Northern California going to a test screening for Robot Jocks and filling out a little comment card for it.
Gary Graham should have stayed in Alien Nation, but I liked the movie. There you go. All right, well, thank you for joining us, and thank you for taking your time out of your day and sitting down with us. Hopefully we can see you around at some of the conventions, and if you can, shoot me some pictures so I can post up.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. I enjoyed talking with you today.
Thank you. And we're back. So yeah, that was kind of an interesting interview. He really seems really into it and really cool about it. So
the first time I met him, it was fun to have a conversation with him and just go over all of the things that he's done. He was at our expo last year, and
right.
It was just the excitement that he shows when he's talking about it, and then the excitement that someone who's talking to him shows about it was really cool. And it's basically geeking out, but it's not geeking out over a comic book or movie. It's geeking out over props and costumes.
Or being a character from comic books or movies. So it was really cool. Yeah, his daughter came out and she won the costume contest.
Right.
As well as another gentleman that won. We had to decide who deserves the comic books. And
who got the adult rated comic books versus
right.
the kid prizes.
Right, which we knew Mike wanted the comic books, but we couldn't exactly give that to his daughter, even though we knew by proxy he would get it. So anyway, so that's that interview. We're now going to take you to another interview with which we did with Vanessa Munoz of Blackbird Bows. You are actually part business partner with her, right?
Yeah, I help her out with it in the management side of it, but it is all her creativity and all the artwork and things like that.
Awesome. So why don't we go ahead and go to that interview? This interview is going to be another 30 minutes, but It's wonderful how much stuff she talks about, Martin. Hello, everybody, and this is AJ. I am here right now with the lovely Miss Vanessa Munoz, and wanted to sit down and talk to you about your company, Blackbird Bows. First off, hi.
Hello.
She's very shy, but we're hoping to smack that out of her here soon. So tell me about your company.
My company is...
You've been on the show before. Don't get all shied up. Break on through to the other side.
My company, it's custom-made bows by me. It's not your everyday conventional bow. It's kind of art that you can wear in your hair. And anything you can think of or anything I can dream of, I make it into a bow for you. And make it very unique from everyone else.
And how did you come up with this idea to do this?
It started off back in like high school. I couldn't find anything that I wanted to wear myself. So I just said, F it, I want to make my own shit. And here we are.
How are you going to say F it and then come back with shit?
I was trying to loosen up. I'm trying, okay? And yeah, here it is. Here we are. You're a jerk.
And that's how we break the ice with Vanessa. So basically what you're saying is nothing out there was as cool as you were, and you wanted to make something cool enough for you to wear.
Exactly.
Okay, awesome. Awesome. So take us through the process of making these bows.
Usually, I mean, is it a bow I'm making or a custom order?
Something for you.
Something for me, my inspiration is pretty much everything around me. So let's say I spend a weekend camping or something. That'll inspire me to make something very similar to something I saw out there. Or I went to a concert. Or I'm hanging out with, you know, outlandish, obnoxious people, and there's something about them that I like. Something about them will be transferred into a bow. I can turn a feeling or like an emotion or an activity or just memories into something that you can wear. And that's kind of how I do it.
Okay, and then with custom orders, how does that work?
Custom orders is kind of like a collaboration as to what the customer wants. And then I kind of bounce ideas back and forth. Because as much as I want to do custom, I still want it to have a Blackbird twist. So that if you were to go to some other bow creator and ask for the same custom, it's going to be different. Because it's their take on it, not Blackbird right. take.
So you want to put a little piece of your soul, yourself into it.
In everyone.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're renting your soul out to all these different people.
I'm letting them borrow it, I guess, for a little bit.
So they come home eventually.
Yeah, you're kind of taking a little piece of me with you, and that's why it's so serious to me, especially when someone makes a comment about one of them, because you're making a comment about me. You don't know it.
Right.
But I'm sitting there, you know, listening and being like, oh, all right, you didn't like that? Oh, so you don't like that part of me, because that came from me.
Right. Like, what did I ever do to you? I thought we were friends, you know.
Exactly.
So when you do custom orders and you take the money for the order, do you feel like, you know, you're selling out at all?
I feel guilty. That's kind of what I'm dealing with right now, is because I have a few customers coming up to me to make memory bows of past loved ones. And when I got into this, I didn't even think about that. And a customer, her husband died, and she wanted me to make a bow in his memory. And so that was really personal for me, and to actually have to sit down with someone and, like, us both open up and make something. So when it came down for me to, you know, charge her, I didn't feel right about it at all.
Right.
Like, I did this because I love it, and she wanted to make it because she loved someone. So it's crossing this weird line because there's so much of me going into
right.
these things.
You still got to pay rent, but you feel bad about having to pay rent.
Kind of, yeah. I don't know why. Usually people are like, oh, give me your money, this is awesome. Mm-hmm. But, like, that's the worst part of this whole thing, is having to get money from people, because it feels so weird, because I'm getting to do what I love, and you're paying me in paper. Like, it's so much bigger than that.
But at the same time, do you ever think that maybe it helps them to pay you for it? Like, they're saying, thank you for making this piece for me. By paying you for it, it now becomes completely mine.
Yes, definitely. And everything that I'm making right now is going back to supplies. So with every bow order, I'm able to get nicer ribbon, harder to find, you know, trinkets, better mediums for art. So it's helping me being able to grow as an artist and as a creator for the bows.
And how long have you been doing this for profit?
Profit since 2009. Yes. It started off really little. They were like $3. It was kind of like me playing around. And then it got really serious in 2011, 2012.
And how are you enjoying that part of it?
Oh, it's great. You know, I got to do a Raw show. I do a lot of the Riverside Art Walks. I've done stuff with Forbidden Panel. Thank you, AJ.
You're welcome.
I've been able to really literally spread my wings, and I am learning how to fly right now, but I'm soaring pretty high, and I want to keep going.
What is the end goal for you?
To have a boutique with a Blackbird corner. I want models. I want to spread in a magazine. I want die-hard, loyal fans. I want an army, if you will.
A ZKS army? Are you biting on my style? You need to back up now. You are invading my territory. You're in my bubble. Breaking through my eyes.
I'm sorry. I just have a lot of motivation and strong-willed people around me trying to go for the same goal.
Well, good. So you're reading my outside, not my inside, because I'm pretty weak on the inside.
Aren't we all?
So why don't you tell me about the hardest bow you've had to make for sale?
The hardest one would probably be the one I had referenced beforehand. Because, I mean, honestly, I don't know my customers. I know them through emails. I know them through text messages. And so when you have to do something personal like that, I had to sit down as a friend. And that's where you have to step out of the business realm and listen.
Right.
And not only listen, but, like, feel what they're trying to get across. So that was the, I think, the hardest one so far. I mean, there's been technical hard ones, you know, where someone draws their own artwork and they want me to duplicate it in a different medium. I can't do that because I'm not you. I didn't get the same inspiration, and that's not my image. That's you. I can't make you again.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had to explain that to several artists, fellow artists, because I'm honored that you've given me the chance to recreate your awesomeness, but that's not my awesomeness. So I kind of have to take a twist on it and make it my own. So it's Blackbird. It's not, you know, so-and-so.
Now, how is that going to work if your end goal is a boutique? How are you going to be able to still do that with customers coming into a store?
I think those would have to be, like, orders that are usually probably sent in to me or maybe a little extra so that I can make time to do those ones. Because this is what I love doing. So if you really want me to make you something and you really got your heart set on it, there's passion, I'll meet you with my passion and we'll go from there.
What if it's like hundreds of people walking in the door wanting personalized creations?
A raffle? I don't know. I will do
a raffle. Who gets a piece of Vanessa tonight? Number 12. Who are you?
Like, I will seriously, if it ever turns into that, I will do my best to literally get through all of them. And you can quote me years from now if that happens.
Oh, this recording ain't going nowhere, sweetheart. I will keep it on my phone. I will text you with it.
It would be awesome if there was a year waiting list for a Blackbird bow. I think I'd probably shit the bed.
I think your business partner would shit the bed that you're taking a year to make a bow.
Yes. But I mean hundreds of bows, if you will.
Her eyes were like looking to the sky, like starlit. Like, hundreds of bows.
Everywhere. Everybody gets a bow.
Bows all over the world.
A little drop of blood on each one of them.
These little shriveled up old ladies in this, and they're like, I made every bow!
Yeah, because when I die, that's what's going to be carried on. Because we all die.
You're going to be buried in bows?
I want to be wrapped up in ribbon like a mummy.
This is going in a weird direction. Apparently this is the adult part of the conversation.
Yeah, well, I'm a little weird. We all know this. So you keep going, it's gonna get worse.
What is the, what do you find yourself being requested to make most of, like styles and designs?
Right now, it's kind of a mix because my followers all walk. I got like babies, I got punk rock chicks, I got cheerleaders, I got weirdos, creeps. I mean, I love them. Don't get me wrong, I love my creeps. But
creeps.
It's not one type of design right now. If you look at my Facebook page, Blackbird Bows, it's everything.
Right.
Yeah.
But what I mean is, because I know you do a lot of work in the comic book genre. I know you do a lot of work on like with animals and, you know, cupcakes and stuff like that. Hello Kitty designs, which is the most requested that you find?
pretty, the pop art, the Hello Kitty, there's Batman, Spider-Man, I've made tons of those. Anything that's related to a movie that's coming out, I know my orders are kind of going off of that now, like, oh, what's really cool right now, or like, the new cartoons that are coming out, like the regular show, Adventure Time, I'm getting more of that right now.
SpongeBob.
Not so much SpongeBob.
Do you get a lot of more adult or kid orders?
Finally, it's predominantly adult orders. Don't get me wrong, I love doing, you know, the baby bows and whatnot, but I'm restricted because I have to make them baby safe, and they have to be a certain size, and I can't go wild with them.
And the clips can't be metal and pokey.
Exactly, and I don't like to play it safe, so I like to do adult bows because I can do whatever I want. Mm-hmm. I can make them as lewd or provocative or rude as I see fit. With a baby one, it's got to be like simple pastel, you know, colors. Right. So I kind of get bored with the baby stuff.
So you're saying no more babies? So all those customers that might be listening?
No, the babies the babies are the ones that got me here. That's right. Why I will always, you want a baby headband? I will make it without any complaints because you're the reason why I can do what I want now. I haven't forgot about any of the people that helped me get here. Because my loyal ones that started way back when Blackbird was just an idea, those are the ones that I want to make sure that I accommodate for, because this is everything that has happened is because they believed in me.
Right.
They believed in me when I didn't believe in myself. And that's what keeps me going.
But you prefer doing the adult ones? Because you feel like you can be a little bit more creative with it?
I can push it, yeah.
Because the creativity within you is more of an adult life?
Yes. I mean, I do have a few moms that think it's, like, badass, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But generally speaking, society's look on my artistic take on stuff is adult or inappropriate or evil or whatever.
Okay. Well, taking it back real quick, you mentioned doing the Raw shows. How did that come about?
They actually found me. I just was on Facebook, and I know they have scouts that kind of look through everything. And they contacted me. They said, we haven't seen anything like your stuff. Would you be interested in doing a show? And, of course, I was ecstatic. I had been to Raw shows supporting other people, but I'd never been there for me. I never thought I would make it to a Raw show. And there I was, like, owning it. It's awesome.
And you made it to the semifinals.
Semifinals, yes, first year. I did it, in August? And then I was up for semifinals in, like, November. So I really surprised myself.
And unfortunately, you did not win. But what was the grand prize?
The grand prize was a magazine spread, interviews, and going to every showcasing at all the Raw shows for free. I lost to a jewelry metal welder. Mm-hmm. She was great. She was awesome. She bought some bows. It was cool. I got the experience, and I met a lot of cool people.
What do you find most enjoyable about doing these type of shows? Not just the Raw, but conventions and expos and whatnot. You're very big at the Girl Scout show, right?
Yes, Blackbird didn't get to show up this year. It was a little too difficult. The price ranges have kind of changed. My audience is kind of growing up. The funnest thing is, since all I do is create all day, I'm isolated. And so when I do a show or an art walk, I actually get to hang out and talk to people and talk to a fellow artist and see what's going on. And it's kind of like my hangout time, to be honest, because I'm so dedicated to Blackbird that I literally work the day job, and then it's orders, orders, orders. I'll have a few days where, you know, I got to get out to get inspiration, and then I'm back in the office, like, creating. So those times let me enjoy my hard work. Me sitting there in a parking lot from, like, 3 to 9 or something, that's, like, highlights. Like, I worked my butt off so I could sit here and show off my work and hang out with all these random strangers and cool people.
Those are called bars. You can get the same feel.
They won't let me. That's soliciting in there. Loitering.
Okay, what can we look forward to? What does 2013 have for Blackbird Bones?
Oh, goodness. There's so much stuff in the works. I don't even know if I should mention it because it's all going to be a huge release. So, I mean, I'll throw a few things out there. We're going to get new business cards, like custom business cards. I know I got stickers in the works. I want Blackbird to have bandanas because I want you to be able to go to a show and know who's there for Blackbird with the bandana hanging out the back pocket.
And some Don Asbottos wearing a bandana over their head.
This is serious.
blood in, blood out.
Yeah, that's my image right now. And I'm
sorry, bow in, bow out.
Yeah, bow in, bow out. you know, it's competitive out there with the girls. You know, I've never been a girl's favorite, and now that I'm actually competing with them head on, they can have their posse. My girls can be wandering around and don't have to do anything but show that bandana, and it's clear right. that I got people here too. It's awesome. So that's going on. I want to do more legality stuff, getting it more legit, and just I want to do more shows. I average about one to two, you know, every couple months or whatever, but I want it to get stable where, you know, every month I got three shows or two shows. Because my goal is to dedicate my whole time to this. And right now I still have the day job going on, which is fine. I mean, I'm grateful for that, but I mean, it's taking away from my creativity. It drains me.
But where your day job is, aren't you able to find a lot of material or workable crafts?
No, it's redundant, like every day is the same is what's happening, and I'd like to change that. I feel more productive walking down the street than going there. So.
Okay. So what was the highlight of 2012?
Honestly, seeing how many people believed in me, because with each show I went to...
All three of us?
There was more than three, okay?
No, some of us just rotated out with us. We were stunt believers.
With every show that I went to, there was more people showing up. And, I mean, it's going to sound kind of corny, but with the Facebook, I started off with, like, 30 likes. And I'm up to 409 in a year.
It's a cleaner.
That's full-blown, like, people. I have people's attention right now. Mm-hmm. And I really am not one for attention, so it was kind of scary for me to know that, like, hey, they're watching, like, what are you doing? And I think I started believing in myself. That was the biggest thing for 2012, was I believed in myself, and I believed in Blackbird, and I believed it was possible, I'd say.
You should.
Well, I do now. It took me a while. Trust me, it took me a while, especially with everything that has gone on with the Bows, and, I feel strong, and that's why 2013 I'm super excited, because I think I can accomplish anything as long as I want it, and I want it bad.
If you had to name your number one favorite, proudest bow that you've ever made,
it's I called it Hurt. It's one of my very first ones.
I'm a little choked up there, you mean?
Yeah, actually, because I knew exactly which one I was thinking of. It was the first one that I had actually spent more than 2 hours on. It was about a four-hour process, mixed medium. It was a heart with, you know, gauges, and I painted veins on the ribbon, and I wanted it to kind of show the people that were walking by my booth that these weren't just bows. Like, my heart was in them, and that's why I kind of named it Hurt, is because when you walk by, or you're not giving the bows as much attention as, like, they should get credit for, it hurts. It's like, look at this. Look what's out on the table, and you're walking right by it, and you're looking at bottle caps. Mm-hmm. You're looking at trash on ribbon when you have, like, someone's soul out on the table. And so that one's my favorite one. It's, like, on the wallpapers. It's on covers. It's everywhere.
Now, when you say stuff like bottle caps and whatnot, how do you know that that's not somebody else's soul that they're putting out there?
When you have 10... of the same bow made exactly the same way, that's commercialism, that's mass market. Like, I'm not here for the masses. I'm here for the individual. I'm completely against mass production. It's just nothing that I want to be a part of. And I don't want to seem completely biased, because I know a few cool chicks that do make the mass production stuff, and they're in it for different reasons.
At the end of the day, you still gotta pay rent.
Yeah, I'm telling you why I'm in it.
Right.
You know, as to what they're doing, I don't know, and I honestly, it doesn't concern me.
Shit that's poured out.
Because of my... We're in a classy joint right now.
Right, high class.
So, what I've learned...
In Redlands.
What I've learned...
Instead of Ukiah, where we could have been.
Hey, this is downtown, right? instead
downtown.
Are we ready? Are we ready? That guy. Like,
I'm good. I'm good to go. You gotta learn to roll with me.
What I've learned is to focus on me and only me, because then you get distracted. Mm-hmm. So I'm just concerned about what I'm doing and what Blackbird is in for it. That's all I can tell you.
And your absolute, positively worst bow that you had to make. Like, this bow, you're like, why the hell would I, I'm never doing this again, blah, 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 blah. The Martin bow?
The Martin bow. That one would just be like a cupcake on it, just a ribbon, or some cookies. No, those ones are fun. I like making Martin bows. It's the...
Super skinny and easy to go.
Stop it, AJ. Martin, I'm sorry.
No, she's not. She told me off mic to say these things.
Make sure you do low jabs on Martin. I can't
right.
stand that guy.
I can't stand him, hate him.
I hate Martin.
Worst business partner manager ever.
Seriously, who is that guy? Anyways, my worst one was probably... I don't like making sport bows. I don't know what it is. Something about it. It just takes all the creativity out of me. When someone's like, oh, will you make me, you know, a Saints bow? No, nothing against the Saints. Okay. It's just so mundane. It's like, oh, it's easy. It's too easy. I think that's what it is.
So you're in this for the art and not the money.
Yes. I know that sounds cliche, but it's true.
I mean, you'll be happy if your art makes you money to live on, but at the end of the day, you're more worried about the art than you are, like, making booth.
Definitely. Because when someone sees your bow... And you're like, oh, this is Blackbird. I want you to be proud. I want you to be like, yeah, this is fucking Blackbird. Who else did you think it was? I want you to be cocky. I want you to be...
It's not epping anymore.
No. I want you to be an asshole about your bow. Like, I want you to be like, this is mine, bitch. I want you to fight someone if they talk shit on your bow. That's where I'm at. And I've been kind of playing it down low, you know, DL on, like, my hostility. But I'm just to be honest. I want you to be able to throw down because of your bow. That's how I see it. I mean, it seems a little crazy, but I think that's what got me here, so I'm just going with it.
I don't know if you notice, I'm slowly backing away from you.
Says the guy who had a knife cleaning his nails when I was looking through my agenda.
My agenda was just so pretty, I had to bring it up.
Yeah.
Well, all right, so thank you for, you know, I had a quick question, though. How did you, like, I know the answer, but the audience doesn't know. How did you get wrapped up with FP? What's going on there?
You know, I think it happened kind of by accident. I went in just hanging out, and just so happens that the people I was hanging out with were talented, driven individuals, a part of something bigger. And my whole goal has been to be a part of something bigger than myself. And I hit it off with this guy named AJ. Don't ask me how I did it, because I fucking hate this guy.
I know, I hate that motherfucker.
And all of a sudden, I stumbled into this cool group of people, and they took me in, and here we are.
Awesome. So, you can expect to see some of Vanessa's bows up on our website and in our store. We're going to start hosting those.
Woo!
So that'd be kind of cool. Will you be able to take custom orders from the store, or are you just going to put up some of your own creations and let them fly?
I was thinking I could probably still put up my link for the Facebook, mm-hmm. and then they can message me from there.
Okay.
Yeah. So they can still contact me through Forbidden Panel.
Awesome. And your website is?
Blackbirdbows.com.
Froze. Straight up froze for a second. All the personal stuff, the pain, the emotion, the feeling.
The tears.
Website.
What am I?
Absolute silence.
Because the Raw interview scared me because I was like rolling my eyes and like dum dum dot. No. Blackbirdbows.com and it'll take you directly to the Facebook.
Awesome. So expect more from Vanessa. If they want to contact you, they can find your contact information. Just add you on Facebook through the website. So
yes.
Thank you for your time, darling. It was an entertaining 25 minutes.
Thank you. Thank you. I hate these things.
We'll now toss it back to Martin and myself and see how Martin takes it.
Oh, he takes it really nice. Oh,
I know that. And we're back. So, yeah, that was Vanessa Munoz.
I'm going to have to remember to pay that girl.
Yes, that might help.
For the nice things she said about me. I don't know how we get people like that to hang out with us, you know.
Obviously, you didn't listen to the interview. She had nothing nice to say about you.
Not me, but I mean, you know, like, just, we have all these cool people around us, and you and I are not nice
You're
people.
Welcome.
So, I don't know how we're so lucky.
Have you met Richard?
I am awesome.
Yeah, he's awesome.
In his own mind.
Everybody's mind.
So... Yeah, Richard sends me nice text messages and keeps me encouraged throughout the day when I'm having a bad day. He's also a big enthusiast in a lot of the things I'm a fan of as well, so people like Richard are cool to be around. And Vanessa, you know, we at the Zombie Beauty Pants Girls, we have all these people to hang around us, and I don't understand how they sit there and talk to you for so long, especially with that smell.
He looks at me when he says that, and I hate him for it.
Mm-hmm.
But I know it's right. I know it's true.
They love you. Everybody loves you. They always just go for the skinny guy to knock down, beat up, punch, you know.
They wish, you know, with your looks and my talent and skill, we'd make an awesome Voltron.
Yeah, there you go.
The AJ Martin amalgamation. So with that, we're going to go ahead and end our 111th episode. That's 111, man. That's...
Big 111?
Yeah, it's a little nutty for me. Martin, you wanted to throw some stuff in there.
Yeah, so we have a couple of Forbidden Panel events to talk about coming up. We have our Midnight Movie Maniacs movies that will be coming up pretty much every week this year, so check out our Facebook page.
We're also doing a podcast before and after the show to let you guys know what we thought about it, so you can tune into that.
Or join us, and you can be a part of the podcast as well.
No, don't scare them off.
But facebook.com/midnightmoviemaniacs, all one word. And that will take you to the page. You can follow our events there. You can also check it out on the Forbidden Panel events page, forbiddenpanel.com. And then we have our ZKS cosplayer group is going to be at the Claremont Packing House comic book and collectible show.
First time they will have a booth. They will be out there in full uniform. Sucks to be them. And promoting the book and promoting the cosplay unit is kind of awesome.
It's Sunday, February 3rd at the Claremont Packing House.
Super Bowl Sunday. So before you watch your game, come on out and check out the contestants, if anything.
Yeah, we will be there with the Zombie Beauty Queen and her court, and we will be there from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. taking pictures of people and, like AJ said, promoting all there is to be about Zombie Kill Squad.
You also have an opportunity to come out there and sign up if you want to join us. So, yeah, kind of a recruiting mission.
Not to mention all the other cool comic book vendors and artists and things that will be there as well.
Yeah, they'll be there too.
It's a really cool little show. Richard only goes to get the pitas, sandwiches around the corner.
Yeah, that's all I go for. I'm not even at the booth most of the time.
Yeah, so it'll be a fun day. It's easy, and it's done before the football game even starts, the big game. Okay. Can't believe you said the other word, AJ. We're going to get sued.
Super Bowl.
Don't say it.
Now.
So that is 111 in the can.
111. Also, WonderCon coming soon. Yeah, stay tuned to ForbiddenPanel.com for more of that stuff. We're going to have so many new titles coming out, so many new issues, new strips for security, the whole nine, so it should be pretty awesome. So with that, we'll go ahead and say goodbye. Thank you, Anthony, for all of your input today. I think you said like three words.
Yep.
Four.
That's pretty much the standard.
Thank you, Richard, for joining us in this episode.
I had nothing better to do. Why are you putting that in my face?
Or the mic.
For Martin, this is AJ. Thank you guys for tuning in to PanelCast.
PanelCast is brought to you by Forbidden Panel. Please visit us at www.forbiddenpanel.com.